you're deploying AI on the network, you have to be 100% sure that it's not hallucinating, that it's making the right decisions, that it's not going to hurt someone. So we're very much mindful of our workers' safety and our community's safety. We want to make sure that we're making the right decisions. So a safe, reliable network is absolutely key.
They keep telling us that it's all over for HR. The age of AI is upon us, and that means HR should be prepared to be decimated. We reject that message. The future of HR won't be handed to us. Instead, it'll be defined by those ready to experiment, adopt, and adapt. Future-proof HR invites these builders to share what they're trying, how it's going, what they've learned, and what's next. We are committed to arming HR with the AI insights to not just survive, but to thrive. Hello and welcome to the Future Proof HR Podcast, where we explore how forward-thinking HR leaders are preparing for disruption and redefining what it means to lead people in a changing world. I'm your host, Thomas Kunjapu, CEO of Cleary. Today's guest is Amy Johnston, Head of People and Capability at Orion New Zealand Limited, the electricity distribution company serving Canterbury, New Zealand. Municipally owned via local government and operating in a highly regulated market, Orion's mission is to deliver a safe, reliable network while stewarding a just energy transition. She partners with business units to understand the people impacts of AI-assisted work, among many other things. And Orion has developed some leading projects in this arena. And beyond just tackling the realities of electrification and the demands of it from an AI-driven world, Amy and team are working on several other challenges, from an aging, hard-to-replace technical workforce that we'll be talking about and building new recruiting pipelines, and it's also including with a diverse workforce, and using AI to improve safety and service for what otherwise could be a pretty dangerous kind of role. Without further ado, let's get into it. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Thomas. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I'm really excited for the chat today and talking about a little bit more about what we do in electricity.
Yes. Maybe you could just introduce us a little bit for what your organization does, and then I would like to take it into the impact of the broader space with AI next. But could you tell us a little bit about Orion?
Yeah, of course. So at Orion, our purpose is about powering a cleaner, brighter future with our communities. And what we're really focused on is we're looking at how do we electrify. Orion is a municipally owned EDB. So EDB is an electricity distribution company. We own the infrastructure and take the electricity from our generators to your home. So the power lines on the street, the substations, that's what we do.
It's in everywhere. It's in the electricity, electrification. It's something we've been doing for over 100 years throughout the world. And yet we're at a moment with the growing scope of AI where the demand for the work that you do is potentially on the rise. I know you have some stats or ideas about what is happening around your industry. Could you just tell us a little bit about the demand side of what you're seeing in electrification?
Yeah, absolutely. There's really two components to electrification. One is the sustainability angle. So we're very much looking at how do we generate our electricity in a much more sustainable way. So hydro, wind, solar. And that's everything from our hydroelectric dams right the way through to putting solar on your roof. And those things like solar on your roof is an example of how what previously was a very linear system going from generation to your home is now becoming much more circular and disrupted. You're generating your own power to power your home and wanting to feed that back into the grid. So it really changes the dynamics of the grid. So we're looking at distributed energy resources and pathways, and that's very much changing the game for the industry. The second thing that we're really focused on within electrification is the use of electricity. And that is significantly increasing. So not just you at home plugging your electric vehicle into instead of buying gas, but also the way in which we work. So when you think about AI, a data center drives or uses huge amounts of electricity. So in 2024, that was about 1.5% of the global production of electricity. That's anticipated to grow 12% every year. year on year and will become exponential. So we anticipate that in the US market by 2035, AI data centers, quantum computing, all of those types of things, will utilize about 50% of the electricity production in the US. It's an absolutely astronomical challenge.
That is ridiculous. So we are going from something in, of course, training was happening in small pockets for AI researchers for many decades, but we had the ChatGPT moment in late 2022. And then leading up to that, we've gotten to these models that are being trained on petabytes of data, which are using a lot of electricity. And that is only, those clusters are only getting bigger.
Absolutely.
So I've never heard that before. It's going up to 50% of potentially all electricity use will be fundamentally coming from the AI revolution.
Absolutely. You look at things like Microsoft just signed a 20-year agreement to turn back on Three Mile Island. That will essentially be a microgrid where all of that electricity will be going to power a Microsoft data center. It's utilizing about 335 megawatts, the entire 335 megawatt output of Three Mile Island for that data center. So it's huge. When you translate that into the New Zealand environment, we have the same challenge, but not on the same scale. Our geography doesn't support data centers in the way that it does in the US. So we will have some, but they won't be nearly as big as what they are in the US market.
But it's still going to make a dramatic impact for, I don't know, the last time a new category of machinery, right? Maybe it's actually electric cars, right? That was actually becoming a significant portion of the actual overall grid demand or electricity demand. But this is just completely upending the industry. And it's something I talk about and think about AI all the time, but from a completely different layer than you are, right? And especially we're thinking about how it impacts the workers, work, HR, and also for knowledge workers, all the different various ways that it is impacting your day-to-day workflows. But the foundational layer, it's really important, the work that you're doing and the challenges that it's posing in this transition for an organization like yours.
Absolutely.
So thank you for that context. Now, let's talk a little bit about, with all of these challenges coming up, since you've set the scene for us a little bit, first of all, about applications. So throughout Orion or electrification as an industry, I imagine there are lots of use cases that are already coming into play that help your employees do their work more efficiently, safely, in a better way.
Yeah. So at Orion, we're very much a technology-driven organization. It's just in our DNA having a huge number of engineers on deck. So we're really interested in technology. How does it help us work and how does it change our world? Has been a really safe place for the organization to play. So whether it's deploying AI agents, those types of things, our area isn't as safety sensitive as some of the other areas. If you're deploying AI on the network, you have to be 100% sure that it's not hallucinating, that it's making the right decisions, that it's not going to hurt someone. So we're very much mindful of our workers' safety and our community's safety. We want to make sure that we're making the right decisions. So a safe, reliable network is absolutely key. We've had some really cool projects kick off, whether that is in the PNC space and the use of agents or across the network to really help encourage safety. We've just had a new pilot with a visual language model that our drone flies over our lines and takes video. That video then runs through the AI model and we're able to assess the components that are on our lines and what condition they're in. So that's in early beta phases right now, but what it's doing is it's meaning that we don't have to put our guys in a cherry picker on difficult terrain to go up and have a look. So it means that we're able to better assess our network, the quality of our network, and where we need to put investment to maintain the network.
That's a great example that goes to safety and efficiency in this particular use case. And you're combining drone and video technology with LLMs to make all of that happen. You also mentioned on the PNC, on the people and cultural side, there's some interesting things that you've tried. Before we get into that, I'm curious about a statement you made, because I don't hear that often. From an AI perspective, that the HR or people and culture side is a safe place to play. Often there are thoughts about we have to be careful here. There's either employee data, or we need to be thinking about like governance and making sure that stuff that doesn't get out, because it's really important that it's strategically important to the company. And maybe it's a mindset more than anything else, but I've heard that a lot, that, hey, this is the HR team is the last place where we need to innovate around this stuff, because we need to be careful with what we do.
Yeah, I think for us, the stakes are so high in the other parts of the business that getting the governance, getting the privacy, getting all those pieces, we can test that in PNC. We can communicate it with our employees and say, hey, here's what we're trialing. Help us. If you're concerned, let's have a chat about what that means for your data and how we can manage that. And it's given the AI team and our business an opportunity to get comfortable, inwardly focused before we go into something that's higher stakes. I would say it's a mindset shift, but you do have to make sure that you've got those things in place, like good governance, and that you understand your privacy requirements and how you're going to maintain those, and that you communicate it with your employees. We're not creating something and landing it on them. We take a very consultative approach. So we let them know it's coming. We'll have a chat about concerns first, what they're thinking about before we actually finalize and deploy. So it's...
I love that.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. I love that framing of it, because it's actually a unique advantage that we have, right? When our customers are aligned with us in the same mission, right? And so it can buy us some grace in some ways, and the ability to experiment, provided that you're communicating effectively about it, right? But there is an opportunity to really work alongside your customers, your employees, in enabling whatever the project is, and whether that involves technology or not, and whether that technology is AI or not, it's actually a relative advantage. It's tough to say that to consumers, but we're experimenting with different technologies. You may or may not experience brown.
Exactly.
Watch out from that.
You know, you expect when you flick a light switch, the lights to turn off. If we're doing something on the network, that means that is unlikely to happen or may cause issues there. Yeah. We're going to face huge problems. Our customers are also our owners. So we're municipal owned. So all of the ratepayers across Canterbury are essentially our owners as well, and our shareholders, as well as our customers. So a brownout is just not something that's on the cards for us.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about what have been some of these experiments that you feel like successful or not? Mm-hmm. Any learnings from some of the things on the people and culture side that you've done with AI?
Yeah, so we've been on a real journey to automate tier zero, and really think about how we can do that while we're in a build phase for the organization. So we're looking at, what does the future hold? How are we going to retain employees when the market does start to loosen up? And how are we looking to grow in the future? So what is our employee experience? How do we retain people? How do we make sure it's aligned to our long-term strategy? And how AI has worked in that for us is about that automation, that optimization of our key tasks. For example, we've deployed an agent that sits on top of our policies and procedures. It answers all frontline questions from our employees. After deploying that and working through a few hallucinations, we have reduced our frontline calls into our service center by about 50%.
Oh, that's great. So you're doing a lot of call over the phone support previously, and that's still available, but you're seeing the demand for that come down. But is the modality, from the employee's experience perspective, it's gone from phone to, is it text or sending an email?
We're a diverse, our workforce is across multiple locations. So that might be a drop into the office. It may be a phone call. It may be an email. We've been logging all of those things as part of Tier Zero. So it's a reduction in all of those modalities. So essentially the AI agent acts like a search engine, but it's a closed language model that sits just over our policies and procedures. So it's generating the answers of, what is our vacation policy? Can I take time off over Christmas? Are we having a shutdown? All of those types of things from a set pool of information. And that's allowed employees to get the information right at their fingertips, the answer immediately, and has reduced pressure on our coordinator and advisor.
That's amazing. One of the limitations of this kind of solution is that it's based on software. So the expectation for a diverse workforce to go into a piece of software and search for something while certain HR teams as well as employees, their expectation is to knock on a door and talk to a friendly face about something that they need in terms of a service. But it sounds like you're experiencing those door knocks go down because people are naturally able to use such a solution to get their questions answered.
Yeah, the door knocks are becoming more because they want to come and say hi, which is exactly what we want. We're a distributed workforce anyway. We have been since COVID. For us, we're not turning back the clock on that. We literally can't fit in our building. For us, flexible working is part of who we are. And so people have the ability to come and door knock and see us. But it's about enabling that flexible working for not only the employees, and so that they're still getting the information and the connection that they need and want, but also for the PNC team. We don't have to have someone on site every day. We can also have flexible working as well. So it's a huge benefit.
And then could I ask about how you got a project like this over the finish line, right? So it's one thing to say, hey, it would be nice if we could work on this particular thing. But then who did you find were the internal stakeholders you're collaborating with to get to the ultimate outcome and value? Of course, your coordinators and assistants, they were involved at some level, I imagine, with the project. But then who else was important to go from conception to outcome?
So we've been very fortunate with our business intelligence and AI team. So we've been working with them for quite some time on the types of data that we have within PNC and how do we get robust data that tells us a really great story. We offered ourselves up as that a safe place to play. And it was really in that mindset shift that enabled them to go, okay, here's somewhere that's not going to impact the network, that we have the support of the team. The team wants to create and play in this space. So this is a safe place for us to do that too. And then it was about getting the right governance in place to get the support of our senior executive team and our board. And so they've been really wanting to see AI utilized. AI and data is going to be absolutely key in not just how we manage the assets moving forward, but how we manage our workforce moving forward. The workforce challenge that we are facing in our industry is immense, and we need to be utilizing these types of technologies just to be able to keep pace and supplement our workforce. So
this has been a fantastic conversation so far. If you haven't already done so, make sure to join our community. We're building a network of the most forward-thinking HR and people operations professionals who are defining the future. I will personally be sharing news and ideas around how we can all thrive in the age of AI. You can find it at gocleary.com/cleary-community. Now back to the show. So your people and culture use cases was almost a sandbox, obviously useful in terms of getting some productivity for your team, but also started painting the way, the path forward for many other use cases. I'm curious about the structure that you had internally. So you mentioned there's like a BI team, BI/AI team. Did your organization invest in a whole new AI team, or did an existing team evolve in towards that? And then working with your use cases, do they then go on to keep working with other teams internally to work on other AI agentic workflows or efficiencies?
Yeah, absolutely. So probably about 2.5-3 years ago, we established a business intelligence team as part of our wider data, digital and technology team. That business intelligence team, as an asset manager, we have huge amount of information. So it's really about how do we process that data? How do we understand it? And how does it support our strategy and just support our decision making? That team grew and added in an AI function probably about a year and a half ago. They're made up of incredible data and computer science individuals and mechatronics engineers. The mechatronics engineer also has a knowledge of electrical engineering and is really able to progress this work forward. It's a small team of three, but mighty, and they're absolutely phenomenal. In New Zealand, the environment is really regulated. So we can't, for example, as an EDB, we cannot generate and we cannot retail. We're purely the Lions company. There is 26 of us across New Zealand. So we're also geographically quite small as well. We've made the decision that we will work collaboratively as an industry and feed this into other EDBs and work with other electricity companies on how we might solve this problem or these problems collectively. And that's in the best interest of all New Zealanders and our community. There's no point reinventing the wheel 26 times. So how do we do this together? And that is really key. But as far as internally, we've been a safe place for this team to play. And then they're now looking at what are the use cases beyond our team. So what that might look, for example, in engineering with engineering standards, the ability for an AI to hallucinate that is greater, but our tolerance for hallucinations in that space is much lower. 99.9% is still not good enough. We're really looking at those sort of things about where can we play and where do we need to create a product that is exceptional.
Thank you for going through it. And I think the takeaway, because the reason I ask is often when organizations do get to the point of investing in an AI strategy or having a technology team centrally to invest in understanding how to leverage AI for various internal workflows, often the people team might be the last in line, right? Even if you have your hands raised, you're not getting the time of a lean team that might be working on other projects collaboratively with other parts of the organization. But I guess a takeaway I have is if that is you and you are in a high risk industry where the ability or willingness to experiment on workflows within your product or on top of customer data is extremely low, that might be a place for you to raise your hand and get in an experiment going for your people and culture workflows. I want to ask about a whole different area, which is a whole other transformation that's happening.
Yeah.
As you're thinking about the demand side we've talked about for electrification, how you're meaningfully changing your internal workflows within the people and culture team and also the broader organization. But then there's the people dynamics itself.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your employee base and this workforce crunch that you've been talking about and are working through.
Yeah, with electrification and with that level of increasing demand that we're seeing, that we talked about earlier from AI data centers, all of those types of things, that means that there's a workforce impact to that. We've seen projections that, for example, in electricity in our industry in the US, there will need to be 30 million new roles in our industry by 2030 to deal with this level of demand. That's everything from our lines technicians and the guys on the tools, right the way through to the back office, the engineers, right across the role. They also predict that 16 million of those roles will actually be newly formed different roles. That's quite interesting in itself. So for us, the workforce challenge is really about how do we ramp up? How do we get the right skill sets? How do we ramp up our workforce? And how do we do that in a way that's going to support our long-term needs? So what we've seen historically, electrical engineering is incredibly male-dominated. 20% of, at our local university, only 20% of the entrants into the electrical engineering program are women. That's the highest percentage ever. We know that we can't solve the challenge and the level and get the level of workforce that we need unless we engage the entire population. So we need much greater diversity in our workforce, both in gender, but also in ethnic diversity, engaging our Indigenous people in New Zealand, Māori and Pacifica, Asian, all sorts of, we need that diverse workforce to be able to solve these challenges. So at Orion, we're really thinking about how do we attract and retain a diverse workforce? How are we talent pooling them into the organization? And how are we retaining knowledge? So we have some phenomenal people in our organization who have been here their entire careers, 40 years of tenure. They built the substation down the street. They've got that knowledge in their head. How do we retain that knowledge and make sure that we can transition that into the up and coming population? So it's a really unique and interesting challenge that we have in our sector at the moment.
That's a wealth of experience, right? I think in many organizations, no one has spent a lifetime working at the organization. And so that's something to be treasured. And something I understand that there's programs that you're putting in place to help leverage further. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. When we had a look at our demographic data and we realized that we have quite a proportion of our population at Orion who are nearing the typical retirement age, which is around 67 in New Zealand. And so our concern there was that we would have huge amounts of institutional knowledge walking out the door. And what we also found is that we want to make sure that people feel comfortable and safe in retiring. They've worked their entire careers. That's something to be celebrated. And we want them to have that reward of having their golden years to themselves while still being engaged. And when we had a look at what were the barriers to retirement, but also what did a meaningful knowledge transfer look like, it wasn't just process mapping and documenting that knowledge that's part of it, but very much about creating an experience that honoured the mahi and the work that these people had put in and really maintain their mana, which is about maintaining their honour and maintaining that knowledge that they have. And so we looked at a transition to retirement plan, and we now have a process where people can give us up to 2 years notice of their retirement, allowing us the ability to succession plan and really get a grasp on what does that transition look like, but also enables the retiree to engage after retirement. So they can come back as a coach and as a mentor to our interns, to our Power Youth program, and also to our early careers employees. They maintain their membership of our social club, so they're able to engage in all of the Orion events. They can come to our Christmas party. They can do all of those awesome things that we do. And they're able to maintain that social connection. That was absolutely important. That social connection was upheld and people could really see themselves as an alumni of Orion, not just a retiree. So we've really created a program that seeks to maintain that relationship and allow us to still call the guy who created the substation to say, hey, what about this? Hey, we're dealing with this. Can we take you for coffee? And that's paid. We want to make sure that we honour that retirees. They're absolutely paid for their knowledge and their time. But yeah, it's a very new program for us, but we've had thus far 9 people take us up on it. And that's in the last 3 months. So it's been a great transition.
I love that because I like to think that this, if work is not just about earning the paycheck, although to your point, like that's part of what you're doing just to say that is valued. It's also the community and the ability to feel like you have some expertise and that others can rely on you for something. You can still provide many of those things, and people maybe into their 70s, that you feel that need to be valued by your family community, but also from your, like the organization you retired from, especially if you spend a lifetime there. So I think that's a wonderful idea, which also helps solve a very real problem you mentioned from a workforce perspective, because there's going to be so many new people we need to train up into the system, right? And just all your peer organizations throughout the country. And thank you for every time resorting to American numbers, where you're talking about the millions there. Let's talk about that side a bit. So yeah, the recruiting channel, the challenge, the funnel. You talk a little bit about the extreme upfront, the education pipeline, and you want to basically, from an education perspective, upstream from the workplace and recruiting, just make it as easy for everyone to get excited and learn about electrification and become an electrical engineer and become part of this pipeline that you're recruiting into. But I know specifically with electrical engineering, that's been a major that a lot of people have diverted into software and potentially other layers of the AI field. I imagine that this is an industry-wide recruiting problem that crosses countries. I imagine that this kind of programming, and it's exciting, we just talked about this retirement program, can actually help a little bit potentially with recruiting as coaching for these folks as you're trying to recruit them in. But what are some of the tools or experiments or that you're looking at or industry-wide that you feel like you need to get into as an industry to get more young folks into the field?
There's been quite a lot of work that's been done in this space over the last couple of years, both in New Zealand, but also internationally. We're not in a position as an industry where we can compete against each other. We need to work as a collective because the problem is that large. And our need for people doing the right training programs and those things is that big. So we've been working within New Zealand, we've been working collectively with some of our industry bodies to really say, how do we solve this problem? How do we look at this from a holistic standpoint and really seek to engage people in potentially a career in electricity? So the industry bodies have been doing that work, really seeking to understand what are the barriers and what's motivating people to join, particularly students and young people to join our industry. Naturally, there is marketing campaigns around that. There's also things associated with the talent pipeline. So one of the challenges we have is obviously in that male-dominated space. It's a male-dominated industry, so we need to increase the rates of females within the organisations and within the training program. So we've been really focused on STEM programs. And as an industry, we have, for example, a program that's supported called Wonder Project, where they take science projects to schools across the country. They're aimed at about 7 years of age. And they do a cool project that's based on our industry to understand generation, the grid, and how power gets to your home. So the particular organisations across the industry have sponsored those to get them into schools. We've worked with an organisation called Girl Boss, and six of our other EDBs have got on board with this program. And we run a school holiday program for young girls between the ages of 16 and 21 to inspire them into electricity. So that's taking girls at the key point of career decision making in that sort of 16 to 18 year range, you're really making the decisions about what you're going to do with your life and giving them real practical options, mentors, and a real life project that helps to inspire them into STEM and hopefully electrical engineering. What we found when we looked at it with Alexia from Girl Boss was very much that these young girls were really interested in sustainability, but we're chasing climate science degrees. Now, there's not too many jobs out of climate science degrees, but within electricity, there is a huge ton of jobs. There's a huge amount of problems to solve, and most of them are sustainability based because we're looking at how do we electrify? How do we create sustainable generation? How do we transmit in a sustainable way? How do we do microgrids and distributed energy resources? But then also, how do we work with our communities on a just transition and really making sure that we're doing this with our community, not to them? So it's absolutely vital to get those individuals that are already thinking that way at 16, already excited, already motivated about science into our field. So we're really looking at how do we develop the talent pipelines from a really young age into the industry, and then with the end goal of, from a PNC perspective, solving our gender pay gap and our vertical and occupational segregation issues. It's huge pipelines.
But it makes me think, I'm not sure what I'm going to have for breakfast tomorrow. And good more looking at industry-wide, how we can influence and market to and recruit the best talent across the board to set up the industry for success decades down the line. I really appreciate that kind of thinking. And that's a very nuanced insight that you just brought, Amy, about different ways to describe the same problem, and some, whether you're talking about like a tough engineering challenge or a tough sustainability challenge, but it's the same challenge, but different types of different language and different exposure can speak to different types of folks. And you got to do everything you can to help us all electrify the right way across the board. Yeah. I love that.
Amen. Yeah, and I think we need different thinking as well. We need people to think outside of the box and to attack these problems in a different way. It's how we progress, it's how we move forward, and we know the importance of that diverse thinking. So it's not just diversity from a gender standpoint, it's also diversity of thought that's incredibly vital to solving these challenges.
Thank you so much for this conversation, Amy. It's been really interesting for us to dive into, first of all, the industry that you're in. Has been around since the Thomas Edison days, but it's almost being reshaped entirely, and like the way it's all being delivered. The first whammy is everything about sustainability, electrification of cars, as well as now the demand from AI, not to mention a multi-generational workforce. There are so many challenges to sort out to, and the timeline that you're thinking on, from enabling retirees to feel connected and being impactful in a post-retirement era, as well as thinking about the next generation to meet the demands that we're going to need from this industry so that we can make sure the lights turn on when you flick the switch, but much more, but even beyond that, the amount of demand for all the various efficiencies and use cases that are going to come in from AI over the next generation for us, really, it's going to come down to, at the most foundational level, We need energy to make it all happen. So thank you for the great work that you do and sharing that with us. This is a lens that I personally haven't been thinking about, and I want to thank you for that. And for everyone who's listening out there and who are looking to future-proof your own organizations and future-proofing your own HR departments, I think you'll have some takeaways here while you're on that journey. So thanks again, and I'll see you on the next one. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Future Proof HR. If you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to or watching us on, or share this with a friend or colleague who may find value in the message. See you next time as we keep our pulse on how we can all thrive in the age of AI. Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slackbot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. Just head on over to gocleary.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's again, gocleary.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.